The Sports Interview with Anne Liguori podcast is brought to you by iBeCool Luxury Athleisure Wear for Men and Women, featuring the exclusive ice-fill cooling technology, along with SPF 50 plus sun protection. Look your best. Protect your skin. Visit ibkul.com to learn more. Welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and my guest is Mike Wan, CEO of the USGA. Mike, welcome to Sports Interview.
Hey, Anne, how you doing? Good to be back.
It's good to be visiting with you again. I know you took over as CEO of the USGA in the summer of 2021, and it didn't take long for you and your team to make a huge announcement, and no surprise, it will impact women's golf.
Yeah, we're really excited. The if I was being honest with you, maybe 3 years ago, I had a conversation with Mike Davis and John Bodenhammer of the USGA when I was LPGA commissioner about the concept of what if there was a presenting partner on the U.S. Women's Open, what could we achieve? And as you can imagine, I was fairly positive on the scenario. So when I came here in July of 21, I wasn't sure if that project was dead and buried, alive and active. And I was really excited to see that it was not only alive, but they were in dialogue with corporate partners. And my brain quickly went to a corporate partner I had met in Northwest Ohio at sort of the end of my LPGA tenure, and that was ProMedica. And one call, one meeting in Toledo, and a $10 million purse later, we had a pretty cool announcement.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. I know ProMedica is going to be the official health and well-being partner of the USGA, and there's a lot as part of the sponsorship, but what a great connection.
Yeah, what's neat about ProMedica is they're a not-for-profit, mission-based company just like us. So early on, we realized that both of us talk about impact, like other companies talk about EBITDA or income statements. You know, we really talk about what kind of impact we're making and we're leaving in the market. So we were interested in what we always call the three P's. How do we raise the purpose of this event? Not just what it means to the women playing in it, but what it means to the women dreaming about playing in it. What was the purpose in terms of what's it leave in the markets there where we play? And then we talked about places and purses, the two things that we think really matters in golf and certainly matters in women's golf, which is let's put them on the stages that have probably primarily been known for great men's history. And, you know, even like when we're talking Olympic this year, it creates an incredible stage for the best women in golf. So with ProMedica's help, you know, we've already announced places like Pebble and Marion and Oakmont and Lancaster, Erin Hills, but we added Riviera, Inverness, Interlochen, Oakland Hills, and a back-to-back experience in 29 at Pinehurst number two again, and then raised our purse from $5.5 million to $10 million this year in 22, on its way to $11 million and then $12 million over the next 4 or 5 years. So real significant elevation. And we didn't talk a lot about the purpose lift, but what ProMedica is really bringing to us is this whole impact fund to help people less fortunate than us, both in the markets we're going to play and all around the U.S., to make the U.S. Women's Open about more than golf. And so those three things made them the perfect partner.
Wow, brilliant partnership, Mike. Congratulations. And I know the U.S. Women's Open in June is at Pine Needles Lodge and Golf Club this summer. They'll have the highest purse in women's golf, right?
Yeah, one of the highest in women's sports. And you know, after Pine Needles, we head to Pebble Beach. So that will be interesting, you know, to see the best players in the world tackle that and then off to Erin Hills. So, yeah, as many people said to me after the presentation, I think a lot of golf people said, as impressive as the purse was, the next 10 years of locations may be just as, if not more impressive. And so those are the things I think that make little girls dream bigger. You know, a purse that says they're respected and belong. You know, places and venues that maybe their dad or their brother used to dream about, now they can dream about Riviera, Inverness, Interlochen, or taming the monster at Oakland Hills. So it's all about making sure that the next generation is even more engaged in the sport. And I think that's what this announcement really did, which is really lift the dreams of a lot of young girls, not just in America, but all over the world.
Sure. Sending a loud message very early in your tenure at the USGA.
Well, you know that for me, I don't feel like 6 months is early, but I understand your point. I mean, 6 months to me feels like forever. I'm excited about, we got a lot more announcements to make, obviously some significant announcements to make on the men's side too, and about some of our amateur championships. We recently just announced a new, what we're calling the Adaptive Open, the U.S. Adaptive Open Championship for players with disabilities. That'll start in Pinehurst this year and next. So 15 different championships to make sure that no matter where you are in your golfing journey, male, female, young, older, mid-age, team, individual. We feel like there's a championship you can aspire to, and that's why we have so many of them.
That announcement that the USGA will host that championship for disabled golfers, that even came before this announcement of the U.S. Women's Open and the future of the U.S. Women's Open. So what a great announcement that was for the adaptive community.
Yeah, I think it's important that no matter where you are in your golf journey, there's something that you can strive for. There's the top of the mountain, and we think the U.S. Adaptive Open can be that and probably lead to, you know, Paralympics and some of the other options that will probably come from golfers longer term. So we're excited to be part of that. It's exciting to see what shape golf takes in people's lives. And in the case of people with disability, it's more than just an opportunity to get out to play and compete. In a lot of cases, we've heard a lot of stories about golf saving their life mentally, physically, from a dreams perspective. And, you know, that's really what this game should be about. So it felt like a natural to roll a USGA championship into that space.
And it was so great to come out with those announcements, you know, so early again with your CEO-ship at the USGA. It really sends out some loud messages to a lot of golfers that, you know, it's so important about diversity and inclusion. Those are two big messages.
Yeah, one of the greatest things I've always respected about the USGA, way before I ever had that on my business card, was when the USGA talks about an open championship, it's truly open. You know, I mean, if you're under a certain handicap in America and you want to try to play in the U.S. Open, U.S. Women's Open, if you're at a certain age in the U.S. Men's or Women's Open, you can go to qualifier and qualify. The ball doesn't care what's the color of your skin, what's the socioeconomic impact of where the zip code you came from. And so it really is a championship that's truly open. I mean, you may love baseball and be really good at it, but if you're on a team, you're probably not going to find yourself in a World Series anytime soon. And that's one of the cool things about golf is, you know, I just turned 57. So I thought to myself, I'd like to go try to a U.S. senior amateur. I probably wouldn't get past stage one, but the fact that I could is really uplifting.
So many different things to do. And I know you're a man of little patience, as you admit. So many issues affecting golf, and you could go in so many different directions, whether it's prize money, whether it's the venues, whether it's technology, and perhaps getting the criticism from the PGA Tour players about some of the difficulty of the U.S. Open venues. How do you prioritize which issues you'll pretty much focus on for 2022?
As you know, I'm not that smart, so I cheat. I think about phrases in my head that keep me focused. And as a result, when people realize that I do that, it kind of keeps them focused. Like if you don't come to talk to Mike about one of four, so I take USGA, United States Golf Association, and internally in my office, people know that I have something on the wall that says unify, showcase, govern, and advance. If you want to talk to me about something at the USGA, tell me how it's unifying this game and bringing people together. Handicapping system, world handicapping system, GIN, course ratings. How are we making this game easier for people to play? My mom to play with her grandson in Taiwan. How can that happen? Because that would never happen in basketball. So unify is one of the things we have to take serious. Showcase. Tell me about where we're creating showcase events that allow people to actually have something to dream about at whatever stage they are in the game. And that's what we were talking about before in 15 different championships. Are our championships really a showcase event and the best experience an athlete can have if they're talented enough and lucky enough to find themselves in one? We talk about govern. I always say that nobody likes a cop until they need a cop. And at the USGA, we take governing the game seriously. We have to make rules for the long-term health of the game, player, professional amateur status, all things that are pretty easy to critique. And I certainly have too throughout my career. I probably won't stop critiquing just because I'm the CEO of the USGA, but I'll take governing seriously. And you know, when you have a governance in your role, whether you're a referee, an umpire, or a rules official, you got to have some pretty thick skin. You got to believe you're doing the right thing for the long term of the game. And you have to sort of let it roll off your back. Most people who play the game don't really care about what the game's going to look like in 2060. We have to be the body that does and make sure that the game is even better for our kids and our kids' kids than it was for us when we were kids. There's not a lot of entities that spend their life thinking like that. We need to be that entity. And the last part of it is, when I think of unified, showcase, govern, and advances, what are we doing to advance the game? How are we getting more juniors in the game? how we bring in more diversity to the game. What are we going to do in our green section and agronomy to make sure that golf courses can survive, whether it's drought or disease issues or funding issues or forward tees? How do we make sure that the game is healthy? So in my own little, you know, silly world of not being that educated, I talk about unify, showcase, govern, and advance. And the more I talk about it, the more I make that an obvious thing in my office, I find that people only come into my office to talk about those four things. And that keeps us pretty focused.
That's a good strategy. Very good strategy. How about looking ahead to the U.S. Open for the guys, the Country Club of Brookline in June? I know it's one of five clubs that founded the USGA, so it has such a rich history. And gosh, last time I was there was the 1999 Ryder Cup. So I'm looking forward to getting up there as well. What are your thoughts about that?
You know, the comment you just made is what I hear from probably 9 out of 10 people. We talk about the country club. Gee, I haven't been there since. And then everybody fills in the date. It's one of the storied venues in America that I think we've sort of gotten away from, not just the USGA, but in general. So to be able to bring us home, to your point, one of the five founding clubs of the USGA, one of the really the founding pillars of golf in America, it's the right thing to do. It's more than the right time to do it. And if you spend time at the country club, and I have, it's a really unique community. Like, there's really cool golf courses and there's some really cool country clubs. And then every once in a while you meet a place that's really a community. When you walk in there, it's families, it's diversity. It's people coming in to just go to the shooting or just go curling or just tennis or just, it really feels like almost a community center that, oh, by the way, sits on the property of one of the greatest golf courses in the world. So it will be fun to bring the world back to Boston. And you know, any sporting event in Boston is ramped up because there's few sports fans like Boston sports fans. I think for us on the operations side, it'll be remembered as the year of the parking lot, meaning we just keep finding and buying more and more church parking lots throughout the marketplace because it's we know how many people want to be there. And the property can hold a lot of people, but we also have to be realistic. So we've really had to kind of gauge ticket sales as we find more parking availability because we don't want to sell more tickets than people can get to. But that's a great problem to have when the demand is higher than the places to park them.
What keeps you up at night, if anything, Mike Wan, CEO of the USGA? Do you think about perhaps how some of these PGA Tour players may react to the difficulty of you know, U.S. Open venues as they have in the past? Is there anything that really just keeps you up at night that you worry about?
You know, I think the good news for me is having talked with and met a lot of USGA championships, both on the men's and the women's side, when you win one of these, you really feel like the best golfer in the world. You feel like you were tested in every aspect of your physical game. You played every club, you played every shot, and every aspect of your mental game. Let's face it, the U.S. Open is a mental challenge from your first practice round to your last putt. The good news for me is I don't bring any expertise to the marketplace here as it relates to venue selection or how we're going to cut fairways or hole locations. It's not a Mike Wan strength, and it won't be part of my 10-year CEO. I've got a great team. I've only given them one piece of advice, which is have a strategy, have a plan for the week, and then once the week begins, don't change from it. And what I mean by that is, I'm pretty sure when the Super Bowl at halftime is 31-28, the NFL has never gotten together and said, wow, that's way too much scoring. Let's water down the field at halftime and see if we can slow it down. Because at the end of the day, when the best athletes in the world have earned their way onto the greatest forum of the world, our job is to get out of the way and let that forum be them. It might be too difficult. It might be too easy. The wind might blow. The wind might not blow. The winning score might be +2. Or -12. And I said to the group, we got to get over that and be comfortable with that. Let's put together what we think is the greatest test in golf and let the greatest athletes on the planet play it. And so that's what we'll commit to. We'll commit to having a plan, making it difficult, making it challenging, and also making ourselves not part of the story.
And sticking to that plan. Good strategy. As the former LPGA commissioner, you left the women in a very good place, more tournaments worldwide, increased prize money, new commissioner there, Molly Marco Simon. She's, has tough shoes to fill, obviously. Have you connected with her at all? And what do you think her challenges will be moving forward, Mike?
Yeah, the good thing for me is I was part of the interview process with Molly and was able to kind of be a sounding board for her. She was thinking about the job and vice versa. And in a really cool way, Molly lived 40 minutes from where I live now when she was at Princeton. So when I moved up here this summer, she was in the process of packing up to move to Orlando. And so we literally changed homes. And so for a while, once a week, she would come to the USGA or I would go to Princeton and we would take a day a week and just do a debriefing. And so we kind of broke it up into a series of meetings. So I got to know her personally. I'm a huge fan. I'm more than a fan. If she was a stock, I'd buy her because I think I have zero doubt that she will not only be a good commissioner, she'll be a better commissioner than the one she followed, and she won't have to work hard at that. So I want her to not worry about the whole big shoes concept because she's a good human being, which I think is where it starts. She's got an incredible heart for this. She's certainly got the head for it. But at the end of the day, as I've said many times, being commissioner of a sport is personal. And if you ask yourself whether or not it makes sense, time, guilt away from your family, and all the stresses of every night, you'd probably say no. But if your heart's in it and it's personal, and in her case, seeing women's sport grow and having the LPGA be a beacon for what could be, it's in her blood. And so she's a natural for it. We do stay in contact. Good news for both of us is because of her position and my position, we sit on a lot of the same boards. So we find ourselves in the same, you know, towns and states every other month anyway. So it gives us a chance to stay connected. I try hard to kind of stay out of her way because I want her to do her own thing, but she knows I'm available. Just like Mike Davis. I mean, he's done a nice job of staying out of my way, but doesn't stop me from calling him every couple of weeks with about 20 questions of things I need to know about.
How about what's next for the U.S. Women's Senior Open?
Well, we're heading to Dayton, and there's another both course and market that I think is going to be a great experience. I think Jane Geddes is the last champion from the market, which is kind of cool to me because Jane and I worked together both when she was at the LPGA and then when she was at the Legends Tour. We worked together with obviously a lot of common goals. So Jane's both a friend and somebody whose game and competitive spirit I looked up to. So it's neat to be able to go back and celebrate what she did. I went this year when we were in Connecticut, and it's weird. I'm getting to of that age where that is the most enjoyable championship that I go to. One is I know all those women. A lot of those women, you know, drove me crazy when I was a young commissioner because they wanted to make sure that I understood the history and didn't screw things up. And in the midst of all that, they became mentors and friends, and, you know, they've got nicknames for me and vice versa. So it's really kind of fun hanging out at that championship. And, you know, it's Annika proved that no matter what you're doing at age 49, you might be lifting trophies at 50. And so as she's done her whole career, I think she probably had a few people dust off their golf bag and made more people start to believe what's possible.
I loved it too. I just thought it was so great. And Annika's play was great, but it was great to see Jan Stevenson and you know, so many other personalities who we followed when we were younger and who were so popular and can continue to be. So great tournament.
You know, certainly. And I've got on my office wall here, I don't think my camera probably picks it up if you're seeing it, but I've got what I call the magic moments of the year. So it's six photos of great USGA moments. And the one right in the middle is Annika when she won, when Will jumped in her arms and Eva is hugging her and Mike's coming in with his USGA bib. And to me, that is, that's the US, that's what golf does. That's USGA championships. It was a family moment. She was proud of herself. Her kids were proud of her. Her husband, you know, was probably the secret drive to let's go do this. And the fact that that championship was more than a win for her, but a win for her family and a huge win for women's golf is kind of why we do this.
Mike, from Florida, now you're in New Jersey. How has that transition been, especially during these winter months? And tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I feel a little bit like Sybil. I've had multiple personalities since I've moved to New Jersey. Summer and fall in New Jersey, I really believe, at least in the part of New Jersey I live in, I believe it's the prettiest place I've ever lived with, quite frankly, within a 30-mile radius, the best golf courses in a radius I've ever sat in. It is a world-class place to live. I live way out west in kind of farm country, and I live on a golf course, Hamilton Farms. I play there in Baltusrol. I work in Far Hills. It is a great way. And then right about Thanksgiving, the life changed in a pretty dramatic way for a kid who hasn't gone through a winter since, I don't know, maybe 1985 when I moved to California. And then from California, I moved to Florida. So I just bought the most expensive coat I've ever bought in my life because I'm so sick of being cold. But I'm going to have to grind my way through the heart of winter because I'm an outdoors guy and I'm too hyper to be inside. But we really love it here. My wife said one night, sitting out back on our patio having a glass of wine, she said, "I think this is the prettiest place we've ever lived." And I said, "I think this is the nicest people I've ever been around." Two things for Midwesterners we never would have thought we'd say about New Jersey. So New Jersey's been a humongous surprise and excitement for us, short of waking up to 4 degrees. That's still a little bit strange for me.
Well, a little variety never hurts, right? Variety is the spice of life. Mike, thank you so much. I look forward to having you on my Talking Golf show in the future, and continued success. Very exciting. We miss you in Florida, but I'll see you when I get back to New York.
You got it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much. Mike Wan, CEO of the USGA. The Sports Interview with Anne Liguori podcast was brought to you by Ivy Cole Luxury Athleisure Wear for Men and Women, featuring the exclusive Iceville cooling technology along with SPF 50 plus sun protection. Look your best. Protect your skin. Visit ibkol.com to learn more.